Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Hope everyone had a lovely Thanksgiving holiday.
What did you do? I'm dying to know. We thought about you on Thursday and said a prayer for you around the table, what we're thankful for. And I said, I really hope Dan Proft is having a warm, fuzzy Thanksgiving.
I appreciate it. I did indeed. Of course, it was interrupted by the latest iteration of COVID pandemonium.
Oh, yeah.
The Omicron variant is now going to be the end of Western civilization, at least if we respond to that the same way we've responded to COVID and to Delta and now to Omicron. The headlines over the weekend, Wall Street Journal: Omicron variant is reported in more countries as officials grapple with how to respond. The Daily Mail.
Yes. I just laugh so I don't cry and go into full panic mode. Yes. It's Omicron. We're all going to die.
Why is the Omicron variant so scary? Super strain has evolved to have all caps of the worst mutations of Alpha, Beta, and Delta combined, plus new ones that could make it the most infectious and jab-resistant variant ever.
Oh, my God.
Like world scrambles here to contain Omicron as scientists call for greater vaccination efforts, NBC News. These were all the headlines. And, by the way, back at the ranch in South Africa where this variant was identified, Dr. Angelique Coetzee, who operates a private clinic in Pretoria, she's also the chair of the South African Medical Association.
And she discovered the Omicron.
I had this to say.
What we are seeing clinically in South Africa, and remember, I'm at the epicenter, that's where I'm practicing, is extremely mild. For us, that's mild cases. We haven't admitted anyone. I spoke to other colleagues of mine, the same picture.
So do you think that we, in Britain, in the United States, in Israel, in Europe, do you think we're all panicking unnecessarily?
I think you already have it there in your country. You're not even knowing it. And I would say, yes, at this stage, I would say definitely.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course.
It's in Canada. Definitely. It's everywhere. I'm sure it's in the United States. And then the headline tonight, Dan, is going to be, ooh, the first person detected with the Omicron variant lives in Ohio. And then they'll do a big thing, blow it out of proportion.
The response, which roiled markets, this existence, and then the immediate push to panic, which roiled markets on Friday, the worst day in the markets this year, has generated responses from the usual responses, I suppose, from the usual COVIDian suspects. New York Governor Kathy Hochul halts elective surgeries in response to Omicron COVID variant. On the West Coast,
what did they
Newsom extends his emergency powers until March of 2022. Of course.
Until March of 22? I'm sure Biggie Boy is going to do that again today, too. Meaning our governor, who's been
with
hiding
respect
for a
to
week.
The South African variant. We talked about this before. We talked about the existence of the South African variant before this was, full Chicken Little on Friday and over the weekend. In point of fact, the World Economic Forum, identified the South African variant in July of this year.
Right. We talked about it on this show. I remember that. We thought it was a new big thing.
World Economic Forum, July 12th of 2021. Scientists in South Africa have discovered a small number of cases of a new COVID variant. They're working to understand its potential implications, but told a news conference that it had a very unusual constellation of mutations. So what we were waiting for it to get its assignment from the Greek alphabet before we lost our minds over the holiday weekend?
And it was supposed to be new, but they thought that sounded like, a play on words, like this is a new variant, and then it was going to be Z or Xi, but they didn't want to make it look like the president of China, make him look bad. So then they went with Omicron, which is ridiculous. And also, real quick, the president of South Africa is like, "What, folks, what are you doing? Israeli closed their borders. We're not allowing flights in from 8 countries in Africa."
These restrictions are completely unjustified and unfairly discriminate against our country.
Discrimination.
Yeah, this is, black people in African countries. I recall the left was in full hysterics over President Trump's travel ban from China because that was supposedly racist. I mean, it just never ends. More Angelica Coetzee, if we could go to the doctors here, actually have some sense of what they're talking about. She's actually dealing with these cases on the ground in South Africa. She talked about the symptoms she's seen from the patients that she has seen with the Omicron variant infection.
Looking at the mildness of the symptoms that we are seeing, currently there's no reason for panicking as we don't see severely ill patients. So what we see with this one is, again, it started, normally it will always start with your younger people. So it started with the younger generation, 40 and less. And the most predominant clinical complaint is severe fatigue for 1 or 2 days.
Oh, my God.
With then the headache and the body aches and pain. Some of them will have what they call a scratchy throat.
Oh.
And some will have a cough, a dry cough, but it's not a constant cough. It comes and go. And that's more or less the big symptoms that we have seen.
That sounds like a good cold to me. What about you, Dan?
That's good enough for me. Scratchy throat. Let's shut it down. Let's wrap it up. Send the kids home from school. We'll do remote learning for another year. Shut down the economy. Churn the printing machine there in D.C. We'll do another round of PPP and the rest of the bailout and support programs from a government decision to lock down. I mean, literally, you have people talking about lockdowns.
Oh, yeah.
And in the Western world, you have people like in Switzerland voting to extend the mitigation efforts, the petty tyranny, if you will, when it comes to all of these government responses. It's always the virus, COVID this and COVID that. It's our response to this. And I don't know, you know, here we are a year and a half in, if there is a more telling example of where we're at and what we have done to ourselves than the reaction over the weekend, sans any real knowledge except what Dr. Coetzee offered, sans any real understanding of this variant, you go full panic, discussions of lockdowns.
Travel bans to 8 countries.
Travel bans. It's unbelievable how little a majority of the West has learned in a year and a half.
But Dr. Fauci, and we'll play his, you know, repugnant, ugh, he's so smug. Honestly, I'm so sick of him. But, you know, he's God once again now. And he even told President Biden, we're going to have to wait 2 weeks to see about this because we don't know. So why scare people on something you don't know,
course,
and what you know?
Course.
But what you know isn't even scary. But
we're
panic sells. So here you go.
We're going to have to wait 2 weeks. What are we going to do? 2 weeks to slow the spread?
Yeah. Oh, wait, 2. Did I say 0? That? Wait, Dan, it's just a month.
I mean,
it's
honestly, it is such a depressing commentary on humanity. This is the reaction in the West a year and a half into this. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I, for one, have just given my last donations to Goodwill and the Salvation Army. I would strongly encourage you to not donate. And 'tis the season of giving, I know. I'm not saying don't give and don't give to responsible charities. We just launched our Food for the Poor campaign to help people in Haiti, as you heard before Mike Scott's newscast.
Well, so, I donate all the time to good or to Salvation Army.
So kick the tires before you make your philanthropic decisions, before you make your charitable contributions, because unfortunately, these organizations are not immune from the politics of the day and the purge that's going on. Both the Salvation Army and Goodwill have chosen to fall in with the new Marxists, and that shouldn't be supported. Shouldn't be supported. I mean, there's a Salvation Army box in my condo building. I've thrown clothes in over the years,
right,
any number of times, for example.
Oh, we go there at least once a month and donate goods.
Done. Don't do it. And I'll take suggestions on where people can responsibly give to organizations that are focused on serving others, not politics. By the way, the Salvation Army, bad timing for this to come out. 60% of their revenue comes from those Salvation Army kettles outside of storefronts.
That's really.
So you make a donation to Salvation Army, just understand you're subsidizing the end of America.
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Salvation Army is asking white Christians to do more than just drop coins into the kettle. They want whites to apologize for being racist.
Dear Lord.
There's a resource called Let's Talk About Racism, online resource. The desire is that Salvationists achieve the following, quoting, lament, repent, and apologize for biases or racist ideologies held and actions committed. The resource claims Christianity is inherently racist, calls for white Christians to repent and offer, quote, a sincere apology, unquote, to blacks for being, quote, antagonistic to black people or their culture, values, and interests of the black community. Many have come to believe that we live in a post-racial society, but racism is very real for our brothers and sisters who are refused jobs and housing, denied basic rights, and brutalized and oppressed simply because of the color of their skin. There's an urgent need for Christians to evaluate racist attitudes and practice in light of our faith and to live faithfully in today's world. And it goes on from there.
If you shop at Levi Strauss or Best Buy, guess what they're doing, Dan? They're offering employees counseling to those distressed over the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. Who is white? Who shot three white men who assailed him? Yeah, counseling.
And back to the Salvation Army.
Yes.
The subtle nature of racism is such that people who are not consciously racist easily function with the privileges, empowerment, and benefits of the dominant ethnicity, thus unintentionally perpetuating injustice. You perpetuate injustice just by existing as a white person, as a white Christian in particular in America.
So what exactly do they want us to do when we're putting money in the kettle? Apologize to the person ringing the bell and get into a discussion about race with them?
I don't care what they want you to do. You just heard what their disposition is. What you should do is not make another donation in any form to the Salvation Army again, or at least until they repent, as it were, and they reconcile with the people that they've unfairly characterized as inherently racist with their this bull jive intellectual sophistry that they've adopted as their raison d'etre. Goodwill?
What did they do?
Same thing. They're on board, too. They're full die. A former Goodwill of Southwestern Pennsylvania retail operations manager, Timothy O'Malley, said that Goodwill first began discussions on how the company was going to be different following the 2020 presidential elections. O'Malley said they stated that it was going to be different. We were going to make it about our community and our places. That just turned out not to be true. Instead, what happened was implicit bias training for store managers early this year, which included 3 to 4 hour session led by a racial equity trainer in February. O'Malley says they started pushing us to recruit employees to be a part of it. He attended a safe space meeting meant for asking questions in which he raised concerns about the company's woke policies. And he went on to say, I think they just assumed that I'd be on board with this because I foster children of all races and sexualities, but I started asking questions about equality of outcome and equality of opportunity, and I could tell they weren't too thrilled with me about it. You were supposed to be able to offer your ideas, and so I suggested Thomas Sowell as an author to have some diversity of thought, and they told me that's not really what DAI is about. No, I know it's not. We know it's not, but that's a good play by him to raise Thomas Sowell. Okay, well, I'll consume and react to whatever you have to offer in terms of instruction, and let me bring some other resources to the table. Oh, no, no, no. No, no, this is indoctrination and compliance. This is you shall follow the orthodoxy that we have established here. Goodwill and Salvation Army. Jason in Northlake.
You know what? Let's just go full on in and say, yeah, there is systemic racism. But who created the systemic racism? It's always been the Democrats with the Ku Klux Klan, with the of course, I can't remember the name of it now. Oh, the Jim Crow laws, and even now with their policies and stuff. Who's always behind these, you know, blue state, blue city things where supposedly the systemic racism always is? It's the Democrats, and let's say fine. Yes, there is systemic racism, and you're the ones that do it, and make them own it.
Thanks for the call, Jason. Related story. Canadians... top voice on health of Indigenous peoples.
Yeah. Oh.
Carrie Bourassa.
Yeah.
She's the scientific. She's the scientific director of the Canadian Institutes of Health Research Institutes of Indigenous Peoples Health. She's gone.
Because?
Because she's not an Indigenous person. She's a white person.
Yeah. But putting on the garb and wearing the tribal uniform, she thought she could pull it off, right?
Yeah.
Picture that I saw of her. She was in full gear.
Uh-huh.
She was all in, Dan, as they say.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, she was trying to pass herself off as Indigenous. The interesting is, you know, this is Rachel Dolezal, right. Elizabeth Warren.
Sean
We've
King.
Seen this before.
Yeah.
Sean King, right, exactly. Interesting, she says that she's going to take the stairs rather than the window. Because she doesn't want to get into this, you know, tracing of bloodlines business.
Oh,
and she
yeah.
says bloodlines shouldn't matter. What she says is what should matter is the quality of my work. Right. But unfortunately,
you lie.
You have no. Well, unfortunately, not only did you lie, you are part of this groupthink. You're an identitarian who doesn't like that the identitarian boomerang came around and hit you. You're playing the game of let's judge people and make decisions based on their bloodline, based on the color of their skin, based on their gender and so on and so forth, their intersectionality score. And now it came around and hit you in the back of the head and you don't like it.
And it turns out she hailed from Russia, Poland, Czechoslovakia, and she even wrote a book, co-authored a book about Indigenous parenting.
Yeah.
Yeah, of, you know, something she knows so much about.
Maybe she can be Alec Baldwin's next ex-wife. Dennis in Crystal Lake.
Hey, Dan and Amy. Well, Goodwill, they're gone, even though they're going to affect my fashion statement. And, I have always given to that Salvation Army. And, the next thing they're going to get is my Omicron and, through saliva in that kettle. And,
wow.
Lastly, if you want a great place to put your money, look up the Fisher House if you don't know anything about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, for veterans. Yeah.
They
yep.
do great things, but the saliva in my fashion is gone.
All right, thanks for the call. I wouldn't suggest spitting in the kettle.
That's
I would
gross.
I would just say, hey, send word, you know, to the Salvation Army Santas. Send word back to corporate headquarters. I normally throw some money in the kettle. Not this year and not ever again, and tell them why. Just send the message back so that the Santas can, you know, feed it up the food chain, if as it were. Mark in Rochelle.
Yeah, I think I've brought this up before, but it sounds like this is another tentacle that's trying to break down society. They went after our jobs. They go after us as taxpayers. They go after us, our goodwill. And then they go after the Salvation Army. They go after the white Christians. It's just they're breaking down everything that we are piece by piece.
Thanks for the call, Mark. That's what they're doing because they're totalitarians. We've known this for a long time. We've said it on this show for as long as I've been on this show. This is a totalitarian ideology. So, again, if you're not following along, then shame on you. This is where totalitarian ideologies go. Every nook and cranny of your existence. Every nook and cranny. Nothing is spared, and no one. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. And thank you, Dan, for bringing up this subject like this, because this is the only way. This wokeness and left attack on us, on our society, is like a cancer. And if we don't have someone like you and others taking and keeping us abreast of all this, so we can basically try to cut them off, so to speak. And I used to take and put money in those kettles all the time, living in that. And I'm going to do exactly what you're talking about and let them know how rotten them people are for going along with it and diving in with destroying our society.
Thanks for the call, Craig. Yeah, I mean, right. So tell the Salvation Army Santa, oh, you don't want my money. I'm a white Christian. So, you know, according to you guys, I'm a racist.
Yeah. I used to ring the bell in Detroit with Ernie Harwell and then did it in Chicago for years. But we literally go there all the time and drop off clothes and furniture. So we're going to have to find a new place.
Yeah, but where Purple Hearts.
Okay.
You know, Purple Heart, they pick up furniture. They take in furniture. I mean, there's any number of wonderful charities, which I suggest. Go ahead and throw some out if you want to give an opportunity in
help
the season
out
of giving to profile charities that you support and that you find valuable and that you know do good work. Because, unfortunately, Salvation Army and Goodwill don't fit anymore. Sad commentary. That's where it's at. Philip on the Northwest Side. Hey, Philip.
Philip.
That last caller was dead on. And you know, it's been going on since the Clinton years. I give all my charity to pro-life organizations and at the ultrasounds, the free ultrasounds, because there's so many people that are so brainwashed and confused, and it's a great place to put money. The other thing I want to ask you is, how much does Fauci make? Is he the highest government-paid official?
Yes. Thanks for the call.
How
he
much?
Makes like 430 grand or 450 grand, something like that. Tony on the South Side.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Listen, I like the idea about telling the Sally Santas about, you know, how you're displeased with their policies and how, you know, they're trying to corrupt our society. How about instead of telling them, how about if everybody just put a little note in the kettle instead of a dollar bill? Make a little note and stick it in there and just let them know that way. That'd be great to see them open up all those kettles and look at all those notes and say, oh, my God, what are we doing here? Just my thought.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for the call, Tony. Tom in Blue Island.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Dan, great test case here because, as we know, how the left always talks about being, you know, for the little guy and how generous they are. We all know how cheap they are when it comes to donating money and stuff. And this will be a great test case to see the Salvation Army funding. I mean, I'm not looking for their funding to dry up, but until we fight back. I hear you.
Thanks for the call, Tom.
Should be, you know, repercussions for your actions.
Look, the Salvation Army is not the only charity out there that does this work that they do. That, you know, takes in clothing donation, that raises money, that provides for the homeless and other people in tough circumstances. And so there are a lot of other charities that do similar work that don't have the, you know, brand equity that the Salvation Army enjoys in America. But that can change. There's nothing written in the stars that Salvation Army shall be the preeminent charity of this sort in this country. There are other charities with capacity or unrealized capacity that just need some funding. So turn your attention away from people that want to play racial politics and undermine a free society like the Salvation Army and Goodwill are doing, and turn it to charities that want to either play it straight, just, you know, focus on their stated mission of service, or outright reject, which is even better, this poisonous philosophy that the Salvation Army and Goodwill have signed on to. Absolutely. And as I said, food for the poor is a good place to start, too. You know, human beings in Haiti, just like human beings in America. And we always, you know, our listeners are always great and generous in supporting the good work that Food for the Poor does. Food for the Poor has built a massive presence in Haiti that runs independent of the government, thank God, because that's the only way they could actually serve all those families that they serve in Haiti.
And they have, you know, national, like locals that are running it right now because people from America can't go to the Food for the Poor headquarters because of, you know, all the turmoil that's going on. Yeah. But they're making it work. They're getting it done. The funding still goes to buy food, to purchase food, to give to them. And they're still going out to those remote villages and feeding people.
So think about highest best use for your marginal charitable dollar. Highest best use in terms of, you know, whatever it is that you want to accomplish with what you're able to provide for others.
Yeah, and
that's the way you should look at
it. Yeah, our goal this year is to feed over 5,000 children. If you want to make a gift of any amount, call 844-862-4673 or visit 560theanswer.com/foodforthepoor.
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Stephen Sondheim play to which Send in the Clowns is affiliated.
Cats.
No. I know you liked Cats better than every
music.
Other play. A Little Light Music. Yes, very
meow,
good.
Meow, meow. I was out looking for a cat this morning.
You should, I'm assuming you haven't seen it. You should see it. You know why?
Why?
It takes place, it's set in your motherland.
Oh, in Sweden?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Stephen Sondheim passed away over the weekend at the age of 91, one of the greatest composers of the 20th century, certainly. And, you know, in this show, we try to elevate great artists, too, spend a little time on art and culture and not just talk about, I mean, in a positive way, not just talk about all the banalities of politics and our culture. So recognizing Stephen Sondheim, you won't get that very many places outside of NPR, but we're doing it here. Send in the Clowns couldn't be more apropos than to affiliate with Tony Fauci's appearance on Face the Nation over the weekend.
Send in the Clown.
The Clown, the top clown, top man, the big cheese, the head honcho, numero uno. Tony Fauci on, you know, the noise out there from his detractors, people with uncomfortable questions. That's just all noise. He's got his eye on the prize.
So anybody who spins lies and threatens and all that theater that goes on with some of the investigations and the congressional committees and the Rand Pauls and all that other nonsense, that's noise, Margaret. That's noise. I know what my job is.
You know what his job is?
He saves lives.
That's what his job
is.
That's what he does.
That's what he said, right.
Don't make a big deal about it. He's just out there saving lives, which is why he doesn't have time for the naysayers, like Ted Cruz.
Senator Cruz told the attorney general you should be prosecuted.
Yeah. I have to laugh at that. I should be prosecuted. What happened on January 6th, Senator?
Oh, my. So this is political. Okay. Always has been, right? 312-642-5600, turnkey DAPRO answer line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a big mistake that Tony Fauci made there.
Big mistake.
Because, I don't know, Tony Fauci, you apparently have an opinion on January 6th. Why don't you tell us what happened? And are you implying that Ted Cruz should be prosecuted for something that he did on January 6th? If so, please elaborate. Of course, you don't get those sorts of follow-ups on these shows where you're just there to basically lob softballs in Tony Fauci's direction, as Margaret Brennan dutifully did.
God, I know. When I heard it, too, I'm like, Margaret, ask him. Wait, well, what did Ted Cruz allegedly do on January 6th? Nothing. She didn't say anything, as you just mentioned.
But the interesting part of that interview was that, you know, veneer is completely stripped away for anybody who was still holding out hope that, or still clinging to this idea that Tony Fauci is just a scientist, he's getting it from both sides, and he's just trying to play straight down the middle and focus on his job. No, what you got in that interview was Tony Fauci as a partisan. Mm-hmm. And it continued beyond the comment on Cruz.
Well, there are a lot of Republican senators taking aim at this.
That's okay. I'm just going to do my job. And I'm going to be saving lives, and they're going to be lying.
It seems another layer of danger to play politics around matters of life and death.
Right, exactly. And to me, that's unbelievably bad, because all I want to do is save people's lives. I mean...
Does he realize how many lives he's ruined?
He's
so smug and arrogant. And I know that it was Tony Fauci without his glasses on, Dan.
The whole thing, is that how doctors talk, especially public health professionals? That I'm saving lives?
It's me. It's always been about him. He's made millions of dollars off of this pandemic.
How's that?
Well, he got an award from a group in Israel for $1 million, and then he appeared on Vanity Fair. He's made countless appearances. He's making money. I mean, he keeps his job because this pandemic's going, and I still don't know why the heck Trump didn't fire him, especially on the way out, but
so
he's here.
The I'm saving lives, I mean, does that rub anybody the wrong way? Does that strike anyone as unbelievable hubris? That his television appearances, because that's all he does, it would seem.
Is he really in the lab working?
Or green light grants to his friends at EcoHealth and the Wuhan Virology Lab by extension. Is he, I'm saving lives. They're lying and I'm saving lives. I'm saving lives. I just thought that this is a remarkable statement. Again, completely went unchallenged. But that's just a remarkable sense of self that Tony Fauci exhibited during that interview with Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation, I thought. Exposed who he thinks he is. You know, talk about a messianic complex. And who he is in the context of the Beltway, which is a partisan. A partisan. Tony Fauci is science. Just in case you didn't think I'm saving lives and anybody who suggests otherwise is lying, it's even deeper than that. This is just a reiteration of an old classic from months ago, but it's good to know that nothing has changed with Tony Fauci. Here's a guy who does not adapt to circumstances, really, not from a medical or a public health perspective. He adapts to changing circumstances politically, which is what we've seen for the last year and a half.
Realizes that there's a distinct anti-science flavor to this. So if they get up and criticize science, nobody's going to know what they're talking about. But if they get up and really aim their bullets at Tony Fauci, well, people could recognize there's a person there. So it's easy to criticize. But they're really criticizing science, because I represent science.
I mean, at first, stop talking about yourself in the third person. He's so important.
Well,
he's acting like he's God.
He's talking about himself in the first person. I represent science. I am science. Science is me. So here's what he's saying. I am saving lives.
Mm-hmm. He's a superhero.
I'm the great healer. Those who criticize me are essentially what? They're the proverbial Pontius Pilate. They're crucifying me. I'm sacrificing myself at the hands of the Philistines in D.C., to save lives. I mean, truly a messianic complex. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
And don't you think he loves this new variant that's happening? I mean, now he's back in the limelight, back in the spotlight.
Has he ever left? Since we're talking about science, maybe this could have been asked by Margaret Brennan, but I know this could make Tony Fauci uncomfortable, because we're still waiting for him to get back to Sanjay Gupta on why he doesn't have a good answer about whether natural immunity is a thing.
That's right.
A study that was published at the end of last week in the New England Journal of Medicine found very few confirmed reinfections among 353,000 plus people who got COVID in Qatar, the reinfections were rare and generally mild. Published in the New England Journal of Medicine, 353,000 plus individuals infected. Mm-hmm. Reinfections were rare and generally mild. And we still don't know, we still can't get a solid answer from Tony Fauci, our savior, as to the issue of natural immunity and why it doesn't make sense for a vaccine regime that takes into account those who have been infected and recovered and are thus naturally immune. Science. Okay. Also this, schools, since per the South African variant, were in full panic mode as of this weekend, talking about all of the lockdowns and
travel bans have been taken effect this morning for eight countries in Africa.
All right, we're going to do it all over again. We're going to continue to churn on this hamster wheel that they've put Western civilization on, the COVIDians. A paper from scholars at Brown University, University of Nebraska, and MIT. We demonstrate first that across all 12 states in our sample, there were large reductions in test scores between 2020 and 2021 and previous years. The average decline in math is 14 points and 6 points in English language arts. These changes are well outside typical year-on-year variation. We show our main finding, the decline in students' 2021 test scores as compared to prior years was significantly larger in districts which offered less access to in-person schooling. Less access to in-person schooling. The declines were more significant, but yet well outside year-over-year variation, math and English. Another scientific paper, research paper, from scholars not affiliated with the Republican Party, not named Rand Paul or Ted Cruz, that shows the impact of the policies that Tony Fauci and his COVIDian ilk have advocated for the past year and a half.
Not to mention,
May well be doing so again.
Right. And not to mention the mental anguish they've put on our children. I went to John Anthony's son's funeral, and the pastor there said, if any of you have thought about suicide in the past week or month or past year, please come up to the stage. Every single person came up there. And one girl I talked to, she's like, I'm just so scared that I'm going to get yanked from my sport because I'm not vaccinated and it's no way to live. Like, what the hell are we doing to our children? No one stops and thinks about that. That's another, you know, the third rail of this, too. All these lockdowns. And I told my kids, like, I turned off the news. We didn't listen to any news radio at all in the past 4 days because I'm not going to put them through this bull jive of the Omicron. I'm not. They can't. They don't need that right now. They don't need to worry constantly. Oh, is school going to be locked down again, Mom? Or are we going to be able to play sports? Can fans come to games? Like, no, we're done. We're just going to enjoy our Thanksgiving, and just we're going to ignore this right now because it's too much.
John in Crown Point, you're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, Dan and Amy. I love you guys. Love Amy more. Hey, Dan. I know what I'm getting. Hey. I know what I'm getting Dan for Christmas.
Oh, what?
I'm gonna get Dan a St. Fauci coloring book.
Oh, yeah, that's
right.
Oh,
I'm sure they have that, right?
They do.
They do?
Online.
Oh, come on, guys. Seriously?
Absolutely. Thanks for the call,
I mean,
John.
I know there were socks and pillows and a bobblehead doll, but there's a Dr. Fauci coloring book?
Yeah, we covered it on this show. Oh. Tim in Woodstock.
Well, I was coloring that.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Well, I'd love to have heard somebody else. Dr. Fauci, exactly, if he could explain exactly how he's saving lives, if he could show us some of the data on that. As far as I'm concerned, the jury's still out on the vaccine. I think the distancing has been random from the beginning. There's nothing magical that happens at 6 feet. The masks, no, there's no evidence that the masks are really helping to prevent the spread of the virus. The virus is so small, it goes through the cloth. What about the screenings? What about all the people who postpone screenings and probably will continue to do so with all the new hysteria over the Omicron? What about the suicides, Dr. Fauci? What about the depression and alcoholism? And what about you and others denying people the opportunity to use therapeutics when there was, especially when there was no other really hope for them? They were already on ventilators and they couldn't even turn to something like ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. You know, what about, show us the data, you know, Dr. Fauci, exactly how are you saving lives?
Thanks for the call, Tim. Frank in Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. You know, Talleyrand, the great French foreign minister, is almost like the H.L. Mencken of the early 20th century. And you know, you mentioned that Fauci had a messianic complex. I think this quote really hits the head here. To found his religion, Jesus Christ was crucified and reborn. Try to do as much.
Thanks for the call, Frank. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Not while I'm around. Nothing's gonna harm you, no, sir. Not while I'm around. Demons are prowling everywhere nowadays. I'll send them howling, I don't care. I got way.
Yeah, this is a softer side of you. I like
it. It's so soothing amid all of this cacophony in politics, isn't it?
Yeah. Sweeney Todd.
Yes, that's right. Very good. I'm glad you're reading along with the playlist now.
Thank you.
So you know these Sondheim plays. Well, Sweeney Todd.
No, it's not. I mean, it's not. Yeah.
That was made into a movie with Johnny Depp, so that's was popularized, right?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Stephen Sondheim, dead at the age of 91 over the weekend. Continue our tribute all morning.
Good.
To show, yes.
What's your favorite show tune,
though? Gentler Side.
What is your favorite show? Or are you going to reveal that at the end of the show?
That's like your favorite song. I mean, it's your favorite movie. It's so difficult. You almost have to go by genre.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, that's a Margaret Brennan question. Be better.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. It just took 3 short years to get to trial in the Jussie Smollett case.
Do you think the
three
tuna,
short years?
Think the tuna fish sandwich is still fresh, Dan?
I don't, is that,
remember he went to Subway to get a tuna fish sandwich at 2 a.m.
It's not tuna fish. We don't know what it is. Nobody does.
No,
it's not tuna fish. Smollett facing 6 felony counts of disorderly conduct related to the false statements he allegedly made to police. And, we're going to have the Asandario brothers going to be star witnesses. They're going to testify that the whole thing was a setup.
Lakeview's finest. They're football players there, still live on the block. Yeah. They allege that he paid them $3,500 to do this. And I can't wait to hear them.
3 short years. Jury selection begins today. Are we ever going to find out, anything? I would think the defense would want to perhaps raise this issue. They're not going, you know, they've tried the double jeopardy thing. That doesn't work. We had a deal. Well, you know, that deal that Kim Fox attempted to cut has no force of law. So do you think we're ever going to find out what Kim Fox's ex parte conversations were with
Michelle Obama's former assistant?
The Chen guarding the Fox
Chen?
House,
mm-hmm.
Tina Chen.
Or
maybe even Michelle Obama. Those communiques in the immediate hours and days after this hoax was perpetrated or was attempted to be perpetrated. Are we ever going to get any accounting there? I suspect not, but it's interesting to see. It will be interesting to see what kind of defense exactly the Smollett team puts on.
I mean, he wasted tens of thousands of our tax dollars, and police officers, they had to work overtime, and detectives, I know, to work overtime because this was, you know, made Chicago as another black eye for Chicago. But those of us who are reasonable, you and I both, remember, we talked to each other, it was outside of work, and I said, this is bull jive. And you knew it was people wearing, two black dudes in Chicago wearing MAGA hats going after a guy when it's 29 degrees below zero. And, you know, he played the part. He's a victim here.
I'm an advocate. You do such a disservice when you lie about things like this. Who the would make something like this up or add something?
I think you would be the person to make this up. He went to great lengths. They went to Crafty Beaver and got this thin, skinny rope to wear around his neck, you know, because there was a noose, because he's a black man. It's a lynching.
So when the police came, I kept the clothes on. I kept the rope.
So you had the rope on the entire time?
I mean, it wasn't like wrapped around, but yeah, it was around because I wanted them to see. I wanted them to see what this was.
Yeah. So is this for you? Is this about Smollett or is this about Fox and Chicago politics and Cook County?
312.
Which is more important to you?
312-642-5600, turnkey DEPRO. Answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. For me now, it's more about politics and what Tina Chen did, that phone call. Somebody should FOIA that to, you know, what was in, they actually, somebody did, but they redacted it so much. Did she get the call from the Obamas? Because Michelle and Barack were very good friends with Jussie Smollett. He'd been to the White House twice. They're big fans of the show Empire. And were they protecting their own? I mean, how could he make this up? He didn't make this up. He's the victim of a racial attack. I mean, a black gay man, Dan, in Chicago.
We live in a society where, as a gay man, you are considered somehow to be weak. And I'm not weak. I'm not weak. And we, are, as a people, are not weak.
Yeah, he's going to have to do a lot better on the stand than he did at that Good Morning America interview if he wants to somehow skate on this. I don't really care about him because he has become a punchline. He destroyed his career.
Yep.
This is what he's going to be remembered for, and it's what he should be remembered for because it's such a disgusting fraud to perpetrate, to attempt to prey on people's obsession with victimology in this political climate.
And he makes it harder for the real victims out there.
Yeah.
Really. And I mean, he'll probably do probation.
He doesn't make it harder for the real victims. That's just a line that people say. How does he do that?
If you have people that come forward and say it's a fake rape, there's a lot of ladies that have been raped that don't want to come forward to say that they've been raped. Because then nobody will believe him. Goes like, well, look at this case over here. She lied. Why isn't she lying? But it doesn't.
That makes no sense. That makes absolutely no sense. That's something that you hear people drone on. It makes no sense. People come forward and report crimes all the time. It has nothing to do with the hate crime hoaxes that are perpetrated that are usually easily found out. We know what the initial media reporting is. It's always wrong because they're identitarians. And then the facts come out and then they sort of walk away quietly from this mess that they've created, which is what they're trying to do, or in the Smollett case, and it's what Kim Fox is trying to do as well. This is nothing. This is all politics. Forget all this, like the seismic implications. The only implications that matter is if there is an accounting politically and culturally in Cook County. In Cook County. In identitarian obsessed Cook County. And I'm not just talking about for Kim Fox, but I'm including Kim Fox. I'm talking about for all of these daffy, ghastly white leftist women in the suburbs, the worst human beings on the planet, and the male impersonators they're married to. I'll say it again. I'm going to continue to harp on these people because they're so awful and there's so few people that are willing to confront them and hold them to account. That's where the accountability needs to happen. Politically, yes, Kim Fox, obvious. We've chosen not to do that as an electorate. We probably will continue to choose not to do that. Lori Lightfoot, Kamala Harris, all these other people, that Maxine Waters, that ran to the race hustle because that's what they do. They're race hustlers. But what about the people in your circles? Do you hold them to account for what you recall them saying when this broke? Do you hold them to account for all of the nonsense that they spew that actually turns, that has real implications because, you know, their brethren are running your local school district. They're running your local government.
Oh, and then they're mad at you when you...
They're teaching your kid at college. They're in your HR department at your company. That's what I'm talking about. This is such an obvious fraud. No one who fell for it and helped perpetrate it, even after the fact, accomplices after the fact, should get away with it. But that requires not just sitting back and watching this trial play out over a couple weeks, blah, blah, blah. He gets convicted or he pleads out at some point and then we move on. It means you going to the people that you know said the same things Kamala did and Kim Fox and all these other identitarian hustlers and saying, you are a fraud and I want you to admit to everybody that I've assembled that you're a fraud.
Well, I
you remember where you were when this went down.
Yeah. I went to a gay couple at church and I let them know. I said that he made that up. You know, this is he's going to be charged with a crime for lying to police. And they were shocked. And then they didn't say another word to me. And I left. I go, okay, well, I'm just letting you know that's what happened. And Kim Fox, she should have been charged with criminal charges. But, you know, special prosecutor Dan Webb didn't find evidence to support it. Or anyone else in our office. Instead, it was an abuse of discretion, whatever the heck that means. She should be held accountable. She's the one, I mean, but people don't care. She's the one who should also go to jail or be charged with something, but she's not going to be.
Well, you can't just be charged with something. You have to have evidence to charge.
Right.
I mean, these things we say. Emily in Park Ridge.
Hi. I just wanted to say I think it's all a distraction because all our eyes should be on the Ghislaine Maxwell case, which is starting, I believe, on the 29th.
Today.
Which is, like, huge, and you don't hear anything about that.
Jury selection starts in that case today,
thanks
too.
Thanks for the call, Emily. We can cover more than one trial at the same time.
Yeah.
And everything that should come out about Epstein and the Lolita Express and all the people who participated in his criminal enterprise and the trafficking of girls and the exploitation of girls, that should all come out too. I agree. And then what? And then what? Who's going to do what about it? I say again, the people that you know, you have to get after this. Seek them out again to say, I remember where you were. I remember what you said. I remember what you did. You're a fraud. Would you like to apologize? Did you learn anything from this? I mean it. And it's the Jeffrey Epstein thing is so different. So different. But yeah, I mean, there are people who are complicit with him, and whoever those people, some of whom we know, Prince, Randy Andy and the rest, some of whom we don't yet. Hopefully we will find out and everything comes out and everybody who deserves to be outed and prosecuted or at least shamed if they can no longer be prosecuted because of statute of limitations issues or whatever. All of these people identified. But what are you going to, all this is like sport. I want this to happen and then we'll like be all self-satisfied. I paid attention to the Ghislaine Maxwell trial and I was the one talking about the Jeffrey Epstein case and I was the one telling people to watch the Netflix series or Amazon, whatever it was on and so on and so forth. And what about here? What about as the city and the region around you burns down, disintegrates before your very eyes because race hustlers, these identitarians, rule the roost and are destroying from within all of the institutions that actually impact your lives. Nothing to say then. Clay and Wheeling.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You know, I expect to be Kim Fox to be, corrupt and, terrible at her job and everything like that. You know, I expect this kind of behavior out of the city of Chicago. I wasn't really expecting to see the left so outright and bold to just completely make up stories. And I think that they have drawn a very clear line in the sand here that they're willing to die and destroy their whole lives on just holding what they believe as their ground. Are you guys ready to die on this mound to protect your values? I think that's what the real question that needs to be asked here.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All this right. Is MAGA country. All right. And to quote Joe Biden real quick, I'd like to take, inserting Jesse Smollett over Trump, take him behind the high school for a couple of minutes. Right.
Thanks for the call, Clay. I mean, all these people that obsess about hate crimes and racism and so on and so forth, what do they have to say about the Jussie Smollett case now that it's back front and center? Right. What do they have to say about Waukesha now that the media is trying to walk away from that as quickly as possible?
Well, yeah, because the suspect was a supporter of BLM, and they can't have that. He wrote positive things about Black Lives Matter on his social media. So they just moved on. Yeah, they, you know, they covered it with the VOSAT yesterday, you know, video, one soundbite, you know, of the, you know, week ago, you know, the commemoration, you know, that it happened a week ago and people are turning a blue light on their porch. But that was it. They moved on.
There's just
no follow-up, no care.
There's no expectation of, there's no expectation of a certain standard of conduct. There's no expectation that you will not be lied to. And for so many people, they just start from accepting that. I know they're lying. I don't want to call them out on it. I know it's a race hustle. I know what they're saying is untrue. I'm afraid. Or I'm apathetic. I think mostly afraid. And I don't want to admit I'm afraid, so I'll just shut up. I don't want to confront it. In the wake of Waukesha and Smollett and the juxtaposition of the two, you still have nothing to say to those within your circles who are playing the same race hustle that Jussie Smollett did, that the media does every day. That Salvation Army, will you speak up? Salvation Army, Goodwill. Is there anything anybody could do that gets you off the sidelines to you, to your family? We talked about this throughout COVID, too, with the negative impact on your kids' intellectual development if you have kids in school. We just documented another study that or referenced another study that documents the decline in math and reading scores. Nothing anybody can do. As long as you don't call me a racist, I'll accept anything you do to me. Marvin in Burlington.
Well, I guess it doesn't matter if I'm called a racist or not because I'm a white male Christian in America, so I'm automatically a racist. But what I was calling about is what's the difference between the Jussie Smollett hoax to someone screaming fire in a crowded theater? It's the same thing. I mean, if this didn't happen too much,
it's not the same. It doesn't have any proximity to you know, chaos.
Well, what I'm saying is this could have been the trigger that started all the chaos that we had up in Kenosha and that we had around the country. It didn't happen too much prior to this. I mean, his little stunt could have triggered rioting if it was done a little bit more elaborately, and maybe people would have believed it. They believe all kinds of other things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this guy should be prosecuted.
He is.
Yeah, he could spend some time in jail. I mean, he went so far as to remember that he took that selfie of him in the hospital bed with that, you know, self-inflicted L cut on his right cheek. I mean,
it's such an easy target. It's just such an easy target. He's a pathetic figure. He's a pathetic figure that our culture has begotten because of the victimology we've adopted as some sort of like highest order of existence, even where no victimization is actually present. But Smollett, he's easy to pile on because it's so pathetic. It's so obvious. And then I say, oh, yeah, I knew it from the beginning, and it's so terrible, and it's just another hoax, and there's so many of these hoaxes, and then you just walk away and let these same people run all over you.
And whatever happened to that threatening letter that was sent that was supposed to be, you know, investigated by the United States Postal Service, a federal agency? Whatever happened to that?
Yeah, the ransom note he sent
himself?
Yeah,
the ransom note, and he was upset that that didn't get enough attention. That's why he allegedly hired the Asandario brothers to, you know, pull off that act.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the defense, well, I don't know, the defense wants to ask that question. Maybe somebody in Cook County State Attorney Fox's office will explain that if anybody actually bothers to ask any questions about their case and all that we knew that was reported at the time and that remain open questions, because, of course, you have federal law enforcement involved. That's a punchline, as we found out in the Rittenhouse trial. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Jamie Dimon is the CEO of America's largest bank, J.P. Morgan Chase. He made an offhanded comment about the Chi-Coms the other day. He said, "I was just in Hong Kong. I made a joke the Communist Party is celebrating its 100th year. So is J.P. Morgan. I'd make you a bet we last longer." He said, "I can't say that in China. They're probably listening anyway." Okay. I mean, ha ha ha, good one. But then he apologized for making that comment. This was apologized for saying that J.P. Morgan will outlast the Chinese communists.
Just own it, people. If you say something, just own it. Why apologize?
He said that it was inappropriate to make that comment because it's never right to joke about or denigrate any group of people, whether it's a country, its leadership, or any part of society and culture.
It's communism.
It's never right to joke about or denigrate any group of people, whether it's a country, its leadership, or any part of society and culture. You can't joke about any part of any country's political leadership, society, or culture. You can't joke about Chinese communists operating concentration camps in their country. What?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Obviously, there's business interests there and employees there, and he's worried about them. But think about where we've come in the last 40 years from Ronald Reagan calling the Soviet Union the evil empire,
right,
to Jamie Dimon and so much of the rest of the political, economic, civic establishment of this country genuflecting before murderous Chinese communists. I'm not talking about a billion Chinese people, obviously. We're talking about the Chinese communists in charge of the country that kill people as a matter of policy, routinely. The one-child policy, the concentration camps. I mean, the history with Mao. We're familiar with this, right? You can't joke about any group of people or the culture or society from whence they come. It's just a ridiculous statement. The most powerful people in the world, like Jamie Dimon, have to serve as apologists for the Chinese communists. In some respects, we have people in this country in positions of influence serving as propaganda ministers for the same. And oh, by the way, as we pay very little attention to what they're doing beyond, you know, involving some celebrity, beyond the disappearance of the tennis star Peng Shui or, you know, LeBron's bootlicking the Chinese communists. Their Belt and Road initiative continues to bear fruit in terms of their global influence. There was a story out over the weekend that China has now taken over the Entebbe International Airport in Uganda. How do they do that? Remember, they're running around the world extending money. They've done it with Confucius Institutes at American universities. We've talked about that on this show. You had a Harvard, it was Harvard, I believe, indicted for taking foreign money. So they're trying to influence American academia. They have great influence in American media because they have so many people sympathetic to their ideology, stunningly, but that's accurate. and they're building client states around the world through debt. Chinese government taking over the Entebbe International Airport and other assets in Uganda over the failure of the Ugandan government to repay a loan that was extended to them about 6 years ago. Borrowed $200 million at 2%, and the Ugandan government can't finance the debt, so the Bank of China, the Export-Import Bank of China, which is known as Ex-Im Bank, has come in to seize Ugandan state assets accordingly. This doesn't concern people. I mean, this, you know, we're talking about this in the context of things like the rule of law in this country and the real threats that are afoot beyond just the examples of those threats.
I mean, Jamie Dimon, he's begging for forgiveness when he was simply stating the obvious.
You can't criticize. You shouldn't make fun of. You shouldn't make fun of political leaders. What? He's an American banker? How does anybody in this country, anybody, say that? What, do you want to live in a free society or not? Do you want to live in a free world or not? Or do you just want to adopt the Chi-Com model? Just remarkable statements coming from individuals who know better. And, you know, the I have to protect my interests, I have to shareholder value in this case, and so on and so forth. Yeah, that's not good enough. That is not anywhere near good enough as a excuse for that sort of pandering. It's pathetic. And on the rule of law front, since we were talking about Smollett last hour, you know, and since Tony Fauci wanted to talk about January 6th over the weekend when he on his Face the Nation appearance. Of course, here's another story that won't get much coverage outside of certain outlets. A member of Antifa named Thomas Alexander Starks of Lisbon, North Dakota, took an axe to the office of United States Senator John Hoeven, his Fargo office, in December of 2020, about 3 weeks before January 6th. Took an axe to the office of a sitting United States senator, his, you know, one of his district offices or state offices in Fargo, North Dakota. Federal sentencing guidelines suggested 10 to 16 months in prison. He was sentenced to probation and fined $2,800 for restitution. He then mocked the FBI for returning his axe to him. So the desecration at the Capitol and the vandalism, which should be prosecuted, as you said from the outset. But that is our democracy in peril. That is, make an example of the QAnon shaman and put him away for 4 years or longer, as long as you can. Threat to our democracy. A republic hangs in the balance. The rule of law. And you have this Antifa goon, who actually was prosecuted, taking an axe to the office of a United States senator, and he gets probation, restitution, and he gets his axe back?
Of course. Give him his axe back. I mean, did they clean it and sharpen it first, too? You know?
The point here is that you have the institutions and their representatives who are supposed to serve as bulwarks against capriciousness, the sort of capriciousness that punctuates the Chinese communist regime, where you have rule of men, not rule of law. And yet we're genuflecting before the rule of men crowd and, in some respects, practicing it here with different systems of justice depending on the political, or, well, depending on the politics of the accuser and the accused. It's sort of all different manifestations of the same problem in this country. And I hope people are seeing it. Joe in Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
So I remember in June a report that the
Political Action Committee run by J.P. Morgan Chase, publicly stated they would make no donations to any politician who voted to overturn anything to do with Biden's victory, anybody who were the, quote, you know, deniers or promoting the big lie. It doesn't that behavior contradict his sucking up to the Chi-Coms? I mean, he insulted half of the country.
Yeah.
By that political action move. But now he can suck up to the Chi-Coms. It's all about the money. Follow the money. Corrupt as hell.
Well, yes. Thanks for the call, Joe. But it's also about American culture right now. I mean, he also sort of made middling statements on Black Lives Matter, you know, mid-rioting last summer. But where is my bread buttered? Is what Jamie Dimon and others like him ask. Where is my bread buttered? It's buttered in China because of the size of the market and their global influence. And it's buttered with the new Marxists in power. The new Marxists that control all of the civic and cultural institutions. And now the federal government, too, as of, you know, January, the federal government, too. That's where my bread is buttered. Yeah, you're right. That's what people are saying. That's where my bread is buttered. But it's not just all about the money singularly looking at China. We're willing to walk away. As a country right now, it seems to me, we're willing to walk away from the founding principles of this country. For money? For status?
Power?
And
all of it combined?
For money, for status, and what? Out of fear.
Oh, yeah.
Fear of being exiled,
right,
for not complying with the orthodoxy that is being imposed by those new Marxists in charge of these institutions.
Yeah, fear of being canceled.
Oh. Even somebody who otherwise knows better, like Jamie Dimon, even the head of the biggest bank in the country, feels like he has to play that game. Mark in Plainfield.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. What we need is anti-sensitivity training, and might I recommend everybody be forced to watch a week's worth of a Dean Martin roast. That's when things were funny. That's when we had a sense of humor. That's where everything was ripped upon, and we all laughed, and we all got along. So I would recommend Dean, especially at the college level, make their orientation week a week's worth of Dean Martin roast.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mark. I'd settle for the Comedy Central roasts more recently that have seemed to have gone away too, Jeffrey Ross and those, but those comedians. But you know, here's the thing about the humor. We've talked about this before about name calling, people like, oh, you call Pritzker Jelly Belly or Spalding. Yeah, you're damn right, I do. You call Lightfoot Triple Threat or Emmanuel Tiny Dancer. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do call them names. I will continue to call them names because it reminds both them and us that they are not our betters. And Jamie Dimon is saying they are your betters. You can't make fun of them. They are sacred cows. That is so dangerous, and I think we vastly underestimate how dangerous that is. The silencing comes next. I mean, in much fuller form than you've seen it to present, because we're willing to be silenced. Doing it willingly. Mike in Littleton, Colorado.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. My comments are, first of all, you know what? You like the Salvation Army. Get your money the hell out of Chase Banks and go to a credit union. 100 million people did that. That might make a difference. But my comment I called about was, my mother taught us when we were kids that the paradox of being producers is what unites us is we just want to be left alone. What unites the other side is they can't leave us alone because they need our resources. And they've destroyed the campfire around which we used to call America and meet. So the people on our side, you know, I'd be quite honest, I'm willing to lay it all down for our country, but I don't even know where to begin, to be quite honest.
Mm-hmm.
Where's our organizations, the whole bit? So I appreciate your show, and you guys do a great job, so thank you.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. This email from, Wheaton Warrenville South High School parents. School District 200, Wheaton Warrenville South. Important winter event spectator information.
Oh, no. Here we go again. Please don't tell me parents can't go to sporting events.
No, they can go, but, I mean, they're going to have to mind their P's and Q's. Fans will refrain from intimidating actions or words directed at athletes, coaches, official school personnel, or opposing fans. This includes targeting individual players by name or number. Rather, fans will show their support by directing it in positive ways toward their own team. Fans will respond to redirection from school personnel politely and promptly. Fans will exhibit positive behavior in both personal interactions and social media comments.
Oh, so you can't. Okay. Really?
Fans. So
more
that's,
squashing of our free speech. Okay.
Well, I mean, do you like being talked to as a parent by the taxpayer-funded educrats? You like being talked to as a preschooler by these people?
Yeah, they think we're stupid and they enjoy exerting their power over us because they think they know best.
Well,
yeah,
we
can govern ourselves. We know not to do that as an adult. Thank you very much.
The power they have over you. How did they get that power? You're paying for them. Okay. Also, after many months of being unable to experience events as we have previously, it's paramount that we let safety guide our approach now that we are allowed to have spectators. As such, in order to enter and remain in an event, fans, spectators must bring a mask and wear it securely above their nose and covering their mouth for the duration of the event.
Does it say not to cheer because we might be super spreaders?
Mask mandate, including outside, obviously.
Right.
And then the regulation of your speech, both on site and on social media related to these events.
And I'm sure they're going to monitor it, too. They know who you are, parents. And if you're mouthy, if you're, you know, nonconformist online, they'll be guarding you, you know, looking at you closer than any other parent.
So as long as my kid can play football, whatever, you can do whatever you want to me. You can do whatever you want to my kid, too, in terms of how school will run.
Well, that's what a parent across the street is like. Well, I don't care as long as they're in school. I said, they're going to be masked forever in Chicago. And that's okay with you as long as they're in school.
Mm-hmm. For more on this, pleased to be joined by Jessica Hackett, a.k.a. Emma Woodhouse, on Twitter. Jessica, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And for those of you who don't know Jessica, she's built up quite a reputation because of all of her commenting on COVID-related policy responses on Twitter over the last 18 months, in addition to offering testimony at places like Wheaton Warrenville School District 200 school board meetings. So, Jessica, why don't we start there and, you know, your reaction to this directive about how you're to comport yourself at sporting events involving Wheaton Warrenville South this winter.
Well, it absolutely does not surprise me that the mask, I call it the masketball season, is beginning. And Wheaton Warrenville South and a lot of other schools in the area are clamping down and treating, as you said, they're treating parents and spectators like children, and just trying to police what they do in person and now online. I'm sure they follow me. I'm sure they follow my social media account and are trying to turn me and other parents into terrorists or say that we're unsafe. We're saying unsafe things. We're attacking people with the virus and in our words. It's gotten so out of control. And these are the same people that are treating students this way in school. That's what's so disturbing to me. If they're doing this to parents, imagine what they're doing to children.
And let's talk about this constant mask wearing. What is it doing to the mental psyche of the kids in high school?
Well, I think you know, kids do not have, just like adults right now, they do not have a sense of when is all of this over. They, unlike many adults who are maybe supportive of kids being masked, because as you said, at least they're in school, they have to wear masks, you know, 7-8 hours a day. They're surrounded by masked people. They're taught by masked teachers. This can't be having a good effect on their mental health. On Twitter and on my Substack, I've posted pictures and testimonies of kids who very clearly are struggling psychologically behind the mask. And they look trapped behind these masks. They look fearful. Wheaton-Warrenville or Wheaton District 200 even had a student from the other high school write a letter that I posted on my Substack to the school board saying, like, can you please, effectively saying, this is hurting the development of my social skills. This is hurting me mentally. Can you please give kids a choice about masks? And to my knowledge, the school board hasn't even responded to that student. So these kids are crying out, and the school boards are saying, you know, ooh, too bad, so sad, you still have to mask.
There was this study we referenced earlier in the show that was conducted by researchers from Brown, from University of Nebraska, from MIT, looking at test scores. And one of the, and the significant decline, the average decline was 14 points in math and 6 points in reading with the 1,600 children that they looked at. And they also suggest that social distancing measures, including face masks, suspected of causing young children's development to have dropped up to 23% during the pandemic, according to this study. So they're suggesting that the inability to communicate both verbally and through subtle facial clues is one of the variables that helps explain the significant drop off in academic performance.
Sure, yeah, that's not surprising at all. When you can't see the teacher's face, when you can't see kids in your class and interact with them, I'm sure, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm sure activities in the classroom that have students interact with one another, right, and engage with one another socially around math, around reading, around writing, are down. Teachers may be afraid to have kids kind of be next to each other and interact. And yeah, I don't think it's only the masks that are causing the drop in test scores. We have these quarantines where kids are out for 10. We have a neighbor that was out for 24 days from school because, you know, she was one of four children and the protocols forced her to stay home until she finally got COVID. And it was just a complete mess. So I think there are different factors, but I don't understand how teachers especially don't understand how they can deny that kids need to see their face and that they need to see kids' faces in order to know the kid and to teach the kid well. It's just, it's mind-boggling to me. And thousands of schools across the country are mask optional. That's the other thing that I'm just floored by, the denial, especially in Chicagoland, that we need to keep doing this. And if we don't, that kids and teachers and grandmas are going to drop dead. I don't get it.
And then you talked about Evanston Township High School and the article that you wrote titled The Madness of Mask Enforcement in Illinois High School, where I would just remind people what the superintendent, Eric Witherspoon, is doing.
Yeah, Eric Witherspoon, he's on his way out. He's retiring, which is probably a good thing. I have a 4-minute announcement that a student got to me where he's droning on and on about the importance of wearing a mask. And he's saying things like, we can't assume that, you know, any of the air that we're breathing or emitting doesn't have virus, and you don't want to contract this deadly virus in school and bring it home to, you know, your family or pass it to somebody with a weakened immune system. I mean, the man has not made any progress beyond March 2020 and is foisting his fears onto the kid during the school day. I mean, this is like classroom environment or school environment 101. You do not create a negative fear-based environment at school during the school day. Like, that just, it doesn't work. It violates every tenet and principle we know of what makes good community and a good environment in school. It needs to stop.
But it's not going to. And we saw that over the weekend with the specter of the Omicron variant. And this idea that, you know, this is going to be the biggest, baddest variant ever based on nothing. But that was the immediate response was pandemonium. And you know this is going to be visited in the schools where they're going to have these, you know, we got to get together with the teachers union, the school board. We're going to huddle administrators and we're going to, you know, we're going to wait and see. We're going to follow the science, which just means we're going to do all the things that we've been doing or worse. We're going to go backwards.
Right. Yeah. It's the definition of insanity. And this was so predictable, right, to just find a new variant, a new thing to, you know, hype up kids and parents and teachers about. But, you know, there are schools and there are schools in the Chicago area, mostly private schools. But there are some schools in Illinois that have given kids the option of masks. There are a few downstate public districts who have said, I think Vandalia is one of them, who has said, look, December 5th or December 6th, masks are optional. The board said they said, look, this is a static situation, I think is what one of the board members said. And he's like, look, nothing's going to change. Vaccines are available to everyone, you know, who wants one. Masks need to be a choice. I mean, he's not saying abolish masks. Kids can still wear them, right? Teachers can still wear them. But the problem, as it's been all along, is, you know, the pro maskers or the universal maskers, they're like, no, not only do I need to wear one or my kid needs to wear one, so does yours. And that's always been the problem from the beginning.
Back to the Omicron, though. I mean, Israel shut down all their borders. We have a travel ban starting this morning for eight countries in Africa. Were you surprised that they jumped the gun so quickly on this? Because Dr. Fauci even said, well, we have to wait 2 weeks because we don't know, you know, if it's going to, you know, if it's going to be penetrating the vaccines and things like that.
Right. Well, you know, I'm not surprised because people have not really collectively drawn a line. Right. So they, you know, once these kind of people have power, they don't want to give it up. History tells us that. So they're going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing until we, the people, say, no, that's enough. We're done with this. We're moving on with our lives. So we're the problem, but we're also the solution, I think.
She is Jessica Hackett, a.k.a. Emma Woodhouse on Twitter. You should follow her on Twitter if you don't already. Jessica, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thank you. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So the jury returned guilty verdicts against the three men accused of murdering Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia end of last week, culminating with a highly charged week of high-profile trials with the combination of the men charged with murdering Ahmaud Arbery being convicted and, of course, Kyle Rittenhouse being acquitted. The interesting thing, and Andy McCarthy writes about this in a piece in National Review, is that the Arbery case, if you just read the media's coverage of it, you would think it was solely about race, three white guys killing a black guy. Well, that wasn't the case the prosecution put on at all. So even a case like the Arbery case, the media gets it largely wrong and has to use that as an opportunity to try to infuse our culture with more racial polarization rather than good sense and an understanding of the law. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by the aforesaid Andy McCarthy, former chief U.S. attorney in Manhattan, contributing editor to Wall Street Journal, contributing editor to National Review, that is, where he posted the piece on Arbery I mentioned, and also author of the bestseller Ball of Collusion. Andy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Morning. Happy week.
Yes, good to have you. This is an important point that you zeroed in on, at breaking down the charges for which each of the three individuals were convicted, and showing sort of how the jury really took pains to assess each of the three individuals under the law and offer their renderings based on what each individual's role was in the murder of Arbery and what the charges were correspondingly. But that whole emphasis on race, that was the coverage of the trial, and it wasn't the case that the prosecution presented. Develop that for us.
Yeah, and it's worse than that, Dan, because it's the predicate for the Obama, there's a Freudian slip, Biden Justice Department's civil rights case against the same three defendants. So the oddity to me, and this goes right to your point about sowing and exacerbating racial divisions that they stoke up and use to do that very thing. The whole point in the Biden Justice Department's prosecution of these same three individuals is that Aubrey was essentially killed because of his race. And my point is, if that were true, how on earth could the prosecutor in Georgia have proved it without infusing race into the case? So what they proved beyond a reasonable doubt in the Georgia case is that Aubrey was killed by these guys who made a terrible mistake of law, in the sense that they thought that they had probable cause to make a citizen's arrest of him. Mm-hmm. Now, I think it's very clear from the evidence that they were woefully short of probable cause, but that doesn't mean they didn't have any reason to suspect him. There was evidence that came into the record that Aubrey was on this property that he didn't have any reason to be on. They didn't have any evidence that he actually stole anything, but they did have evidence that things were stolen from that site, and he was there under circumstances repeatedly filmed there under circumstances where he had no reason to be there, and they suspected that he was at least one of the people who was stealing stuff from there.
Well,
now,
but other people were filmed. I mean, I looked at that surveillance tape too, and there's a lot of other people from the neighborhood that would walk through those properties
right.
that were under construction. Why didn't they chase after them?
Well, I don't think they saw them that day, Amy, but they did know that the police had been showing photographs of Aubrey.
Okay.
And I'm not, don't get me wrong here, I'm not saying that there aren't racial attitudes here. I don't know if there are or there aren't. There may be. But there's no – the evidence in the case is that they suspected this guy of being a thief, and they had insufficient evidence for that. And as a result, they – it was excessive force for them. Since they didn't have a right to make an arrest in the first place, it was assault for them to chase the guy. And obviously they didn't even have a basis to use force. And they used lethal force, so they were
right.
properly convicted of murder. But all I'm saying is the Justice Department's theory and what the media is trying to sell the country is that these three guys were out hunting down black guys because it was, it was Sunday afternoon, so it's time to go out and shoot a black guy. And that's really not what happened. They actually did suspect this guy.
Well, and in addition to that, if there was evidence to support the racial component, then the prosecutor ostensibly would have presented it because there's nothing but upside to present it, right? That provides the motive for why they potentially, if there was evidence to support it, provides the motive for why they exceeded the authority they had under the law.
Yeah, I think that's the big point to me, Dan, is I was reacting mainly to a story in the New York Times where they basically acknowledged that the prosecutor didn't turn it into a racial case and made up some cockamamie thing about how it might have been offensive to the jury to do that. And I can tell you, having been a prosecutor for 20 years, if you have motive evidence, and here, understand, in most cases you don't have to prove motive beyond a reasonable doubt because it's not what they call an element of the offense. So you're allowed to prove it because it's relevant to showing intent. But you don't have to prove it, and it's not an element in the offense. In a federal civil rights prosecution, it is an element of the offense that you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. So the Biden Justice Department would have to prove that Aubrey was killed because of his race beyond a reasonable doubt, that was the reason that they went after him. So what the Biden administration is saying is, in this case, the proof of racism is so powerful, we can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And you're telling me the Georgia prosecutor didn't use it?
Right.
When you have motive evidence that's powerful motive evidence in a murder prosecution, you use it.
You know what they're going to argue? They're going to say this, and the New York Times will report. They say, well, this is evidence of systemic racism. They didn't use race because they were afraid that it would have got these guys acquitted, but they still got three guys convicted of the murder of Arbery. And that's still, no matter, even that is still evidence of systemic racism in the system.
Yeah, well, that's because that's what they're down to. And that's what I think the Biden civil rights prosecution will be about. You know, they can't prove, because if they could, the Georgia prosecutor would have done it. They can't prove that these guys had such deep racial animus that they would go out and kill somebody. But what they're going to say is that the inherent racism in America, even if undetected day to day, is so insidious that it was that really the people who were involved, who are charged as defendants, they're really just sort of the pointy end of the spear. But let's face it, we all killed Ahmaud Arbery because we're all racist.
Right.
I mean, that's what the pitch is.
Right.
Can we move over to Waukesha and what happened there and about this bail charade that needs to be ended?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I really think, you know, this whole idea of what the progressive prosecutors say is that cash bail is essentially another tool of racism because it criminalizes poverty. Only the rich people are able to make bail, and the poor people have to sit and rot in jail. So it's a ridiculous narrative because the number of people who are in jail because they don't get bail is a function of people's offense patterns. And, you know, if a group offends at higher rates, then they're going to be denied bail on higher rates and they're going to be, you know, post-trial convicts at higher rates. But we are playing into the progressive narrative by having this idiotic system where you know that somebody like this guy who committed this awful mass murder attack in Waukesha, we all should say he's a danger to the community. He shouldn't get out on bail. But in Wisconsin, like in many states, they don't have a provision that allows a court to deny bail. So you have to set bail. And what that ends up meaning is you set it at such a high rate that explicitly in this case, they said, we need to set it so high he can't meet it. And in the meantime, the purpose of bail is to allow somebody to be at liberty while the trial, you know, while you're awaiting trial and standing trial. And what the Constitution says is that excessive bail is prohibited, which means you don't have to set bail in every case, but where you do set it, it has to be makeable bail. It's got to be reasonable. So what I'm suggesting is that the states adopt the federal standard. And I recoil from that kind of a requirement. But the fact is that the Congress has been dealing with the Eighth Amendment longer than the states have, and they've passed legislation in the 1980s with respect to it that the Supreme Court has basically said was fine constitutionally. And what it allows a court to do is deny bail if somebody is shown by the prosecutors to be a danger to the community, which can mean the community at large or to people, specific people in it, like witnesses, for example. So the court can just deny bail. So it's not a situation where anybody can say bail was denied because of your race or bail was denied because you were too poor to make bail. It has to be the prosecutor can prove that, you know, at a certain quantum of evidence in federal court, it's clear and convincing evidence that you are such a danger to the community that you can't be on release prior to trial. And then we get rid of this whole charade where, you know, you set bail at $5 million like they did for this guy Brooks in Waukesha because they think that's the amount he can't make.
Well, then the flip side, though, even without adopting the federal standard is, I mean, there's just sort of the common sense standard of this guy is a habitual criminal. And for him to be given $1,000 bail the weekend before he committed this atrocity, this mass murder, be $1,000 bail for trying to run his baby mama over with a car with a criminal history he has. I mean, what is a prosecutor thinking?
Well, what they're thinking is, you know, this particular guy, a progressive prosecutor, you know, their principle, if you can call it that.
Yeah, right.
That nobody should be in jail in the first place, but nobody should be denied bail. Everybody should be out. Why we even decide whether we should prosecute? I mean, most of the time they don't want to prosecute. They want to divert. And you can't say that this guy didn't think of it, because in 2007, this is the prosecutor, John Chisholm, in Milwaukee.
Right.
He explicitly said in an interview, you know, look, is someone that I divert or release going to go out and commit murder on release? Sure, that's going to happen. But even though that's guaranteed to happen, it's still worth pushing through these reforms. So that sounds, I suppose that sounds great to progressives on the campaign trail. But the problem is that these nostrums end up colliding with real life. And the result of it is what you see in Waukesha, a guy who has no business being out on bail, who was let out not one, but two cases in Milwaukee at a time when there was a pending sex offender warrant out from him before him from Nevada, mm-hmm. is turned back out on the street and commits a mass murder attack.
It's one of the things I think people have a hard time believing, that these prosecutors like Chisholm, like Fox, like Krasner, like Bowden, they are ideologues, and that their ideology takes precedence over the rule of law or public safety. But people just have a hard time actually accepting that's the case.
Yeah, I think that's right. But the other thing we have to bear in mind here is every single one of these guys that you just mentioned, Dan, they're all elected.
Yeah.
I mean, the people elected these people.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes you get what you vote for, and
we know what that's like in Chicago.
Good and hard, as H.L. Mencken used to say. That's right. Andy McCarthy, former chief assistant U.S. attorney in Manhattan, contributing International Review, author of the bestseller Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. Andy, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Have a great week. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch. And it feels so good. You switch to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, this is an incredible story, really. The last time Betty Grebenshikov and Anna Marie Warrenberg saw each other was in the spring of 1939 when they were both 9 years old. They shared a hug in a Berlin schoolyard before their families were forced to flee the country and the Nazis on the cusp of World War II. Well, they reunited earlier this month. They're both now 91 years old. It was the first time they had seen each other in 82 years.
Wow, I just got the chills.
And some interesting comments. I mean, because what are we talking about here? Identity politics. That's what we're talking about.
Sure. Did people even cover it?
Washington Post, Amazon Post covered the story, but they're not taking away the lesson or many of the lessons. This is Betty Grebenshikov explaining what happened when they were nine.
But things started to change in 38. First of all, my father came one day and said, "Aren't we lucky we're all getting new middle names? All the Jewish females had to use Sarah as a middle name. And Jewish males had to use Israel as a middle name." That was not a compliment. That was an insult and a degradation to point out that we were Jewish people. This had to be done at the police station. Our papers had to be changed.
Oh,
and the friends that I used to play with on the street and in our garden suddenly were against me and called me a dirty Jew. And wouldn't play with me anymore. And I couldn't understand all that. Why were they throwing stones at me on the street? You know, why were they pushing me in the gutter? And I said to my mother, "What did I do?" And she said, "Shh, we have to be very, very careful because we're Jews." And that was the first time I ever heard the fact that being Jewish was not very healthy. And I couldn't understand what was going on. We couldn't go anywhere anymore. We couldn't go swimming. We couldn't go to parks. We couldn't. It was very difficult at that point. And as a nine-year-old, I didn't understand it.
And they met in St. Petersburg, Florida, by the way, free state.
Yeah. But what she was describing sounds like what kids are going through in San Francisco if they're not vaccinated.
Well, I'm not going to compare that to the Nazis.
Well, I'm not. I just meant by certain restrictions. I didn't. Obviously, you can't compare anything to the Holocaust.
But what I would say is that is the end of the road of identitarian politics. It's totalitarian in nature. That's where it ends.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So I posted about this story over the weekend because I'm just so sick of reporting like this. 7 anti-vaccine doctors catch COVID at Florida Summit for alternative treatments.
And how gleeful they were that they caught it.
First of all, they're not anti-vaccine. They're anti-vaccine mandate.
Big difference, but they skipped that detail.
I tweeted about this and said 147 million Americans have natural immunity, CDC numbers, as well as a projected one half of kids age 5 to 11. We've talked about that with Dr. Marty Makary, among others. Only 6 states cling to indoor mask mandates.
Well, it's now 4. Well, I'm just saying it reduces, and Washington, D.C. is done, too, with it. You know.
In 26 of 30 studies, ivermectin beats placebos. We had that from the wrap-up that we discussed yesterday of all of the studies on ivermectin. And I'm not saying not ivermectin or bust. I'm just using that as an example. And I said Big Pharma is pushing out their own therapeutics through the FDA. You both have Merck and Pfizer with pills that are pending, actually. Molnupiravir appears to not be as effective based on recent reporting on how that's performing. And yet stories like this persist, like you get COVID based on what your position is, your public policy position is on vax mandates. Like if you're pro-vaccine mandate, it's not a story if you get infected. If you're anti-vaccine mandate, it is a story if you get infected. It's ridiculous.
And what about the storyline, too, though, that you know, if you're not vaccinated, you're the reason why the Omicron is here.
So this got flagged as misleading.
Oh, really?
That tweet of mine. And so whatever. I don't care about that other than the sense of like, so those are just data points from government and from, but you know, in the case of ivermectin, it's just a rundown of the studies on the topic. That's just what it is. And yet it's misleading because anything that is not of the order, if you don't wear a mask and you don't get your jab and you don't support mandates for both, then you're a science denier, you're non-compliant, and you need to be stamped out or labeled as non-compliant. And so this was interesting because I was thinking about this in the context of some comments Bill Gates made recently at this new economic forum hosted by Bloomberg News. Listen to Bill Gates expressing disappointment with the pushback that COVID public policies have received in the Western world.
Well, I'm not sure that, you know, this was an interesting trust, case test of people's trust in their politicians or their health system. And, you know, statistically, we didn't do as well as I would have expected. You know, in fact, you know, I'm cited as some, you know, mastermind of some evil plot in many, many cases. So, no, I didn't expect any of that. You know, in some ways, the politicization of, you know, taking vaccines and helping protect other people, you could almost say that's a step backwards. You know, I hope vaccine acceptance for other diseases like measles is not reduced by this. But, you know, a lot of people jumped in and took the vaccines, but a meaningful minority in most countries were led down a path of believing that not only, you know, were there rare side effects, but that the vaccine wasn't properly tested or was part of some evil conspiracy.
Yeah, that's what people like Bill Gates do. They just relegate everybody as to being some sort of conspiracy theorist if they have any questions or have disagreements based on, for example, the approach, the vaccine mandate regime, why there isn't consideration for those that have natural immunity, for example, even as we don't get straight answers on that specific topic from Tony Fauci and the other Panjan drums that we're supposed to genuflect before as a matter of being, you know, civically minded. It's real tiresome. And that natural immunity piece is the one of the things I'm going to continue to focus on, because there's no explanation for it. And the explanation gets even more curious. The lack of an explanation gets even more curious when you have now a Qatari study out that we mentioned earlier in the show. 353,000 people looked at, and they who were infected show the reinfection of those who had been infected, very rare, and when there is reinfection, very mild. But natural immunity is a phrase that shall not be spoken in these media, government, COVIDian circles. For more on all this, pleased to be joined by Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. He's professor of medicine at Stanford. He is a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research, senior fellow at the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research, and at the Stanford Freeman Spugli Institute. Dr. Bhattacharya, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
What about Bill Gates' comments there about, you know, he's a little disappointed by the pushback, those who he would characterize as having succumbed to misinformation, and so they are noncompliant?
I mean, I think it's ironic. What's happened during this pandemic is there's been this infrastructure set up by big tech, by big journalism, and in cooperation with big government, essentially to suppress open discussion about all of these issues. I personally have been censored, even though during a conversation with Governor DeSantis, a public roundtable, where I mentioned the fact that there are no studies, no randomized high-quality studies that establish that child masking does anything important as far as COVID is concerned. And YouTube censored me. It's absolutely incredible that we have now a situation where people can make reasonable statements about what the data are actually showing and yet be suppressed by sort of the official powers that be. It's no wonder that people distrust the pronouncements of government, about pronouncements of big pharma and so on, when you have a situation where any dissenting voice is suppressed, labeled as misinformation.
Bill Gates
shouldn't be surprised.
We've been yanked off of YouTube a few times just because certain guests that we haven't come on talking about masks or vaccine mandates or vaccines in general, then they'll yank us. But for vaccines for children, they're really pushing this now, especially with the Omicron here. Do you think children that are healthy, 5 to 11 years old, need to be vaccinated?
I mean, I think that should be a discussion between the child's pediatrician and the parents about this. I do not think it should be mandated. And I think it's a completely reasonable position. Children have very, very low risk of severe outcomes from COVID. The flu is more dangerous to children than COVID. And so whether to get the vaccine or not, I mean, it does have some side effects. I think it's relatively safe for most kids even. But, you know, there are some concerns, legitimate concerns, and it should not be forced on children at all.
And I want you to hear some snippet of what Tony Fauci had to say over the weekend on Face the Nation, where he sort of reiterated something he had said months earlier, which is essentially that, you know, Tony Fauci is science, science is Tony Fauci.
Realizes that there's a distinct anti-science flavor to this. So if they get up and criticize science, nobody's going to know what they're talking about. But if they get up and really aim their bullets at Tony Fauci, well, people could recognize there's a person there. So it's easy to criticize. But they're really criticizing science, because I represent science.
What about that, Dr. Bhattacharya? To criticize Tony Fauci is to criticize science?
I mean, that is the most astonishing thing I've ever heard a scientist ever say. No scientist who I've ever encountered that I respect ever believes that they are, you know, they possess the truth, and anyone that contradicts them is therefore ipso facto arguing against the truth. That discredits itself. It's amazing to me that someone like him with such hubris has been at the center of COVID policy. He's He's been blind to lockdown harms the entire time. He's the reason why schools closed through much of the country last year. And he's the reason why much of the panic has happened. And he has pushed policies that have harmed so many people, including the idea that natural immune people are not actually protected against COVID, which is just false. I think, has caused a tremendous amount of harm to trust in public health. And I think it's time for him to resign.
Yeah, the thing about it, too, is sort of like what they do with misinformation, the projection game that they play. So Tony Fauci is somehow being scapegoated here. I mean, he has been elevated by that alliance that you described at the outset of big media, big government, and big tech. While people like you or Martin Kulldorff at Harvard or Sunetra Gupta at Oxford or your colleague, Professor Ioannidis at Stanford, they're the ones who've been censored by the big tech. They've been sidelined. You have many of you have the same credentials, if not better, than anybody in the U.S. government. And yet your considered opinions are just to be ignored, according to that alliance that you described.
Well, I think it's one of these things where when someone resorts to censorship, that reveals a weakness in the argument they actually have. What argument does Tony Fauci have that the lockdowns that he has pushed so hard for 2 years have done much of anything at all? 750,000 Americans have died from COVID. How have his policies, he's the architect of the lockdowns, how have his policies been successful in any way? It is completely reasonable to ask that question. And the fact that these entities have to resort to censorship to get their way tells you something about the weakness of the actual intellectual positions they hold.
What do you make quickly of this Omicron variant and our vaccines, effective against it? And if we don't even know, and it takes a few weeks, why are we hitting the panic button now?
Yeah, so we don't know yet. We still have data coming in. Although the data coming in the last couple of days suggests a couple of things. One is that it's not just found in South Africa. It's been now found in Belgium, in Ontario, in Scotland. It's likely that this is a variant that's lots of different places. So that these travel bans that we panicked into will do nothing. As far as the severity of it, the news out of South Africa so far is actually quite comforting. All of the cases that are reported are actually mild, and among vaccinated patients in particular, it's still mild. There's some theories about whether there may be some immune escape or not. I don't think that much of that's speculative at this point. It is absolutely irresponsible to panic the public over this. This is something to watch, but not something to panic anybody over.
Yeah, Dr. Angelique Coetzee, who's the head of the medical society there, said exactly that in interviews, that the West is panicking without any basis. But it's just one of those things where you're just flabbergasted. I mean, it has to be ideological, because you can't just willfully be blind to what people on the ground who are medical doctors are saying, to what you were talking about before, the research, including another research paper out just last week from scholars at Brown and Nebraska and MIT, finding how test scores have dropped in math and reading significantly more so than normally year over year because of the lockdowns. They cite specifically the worst performers were those with the least access to in-person learning. I mean, all this stuff that is out there that just goes completely ignored if it's not dismissed out of hand.
Yeah, I mean, I think the harms of the lockdown are catastrophic. At this point, the only question is whether the harm from the lockdowns are two or three or four more orders of magnitude of whatever we think we'd say lives we save from it. I think it's unlikely the lockdowns save any lives at all, actually. But instead, what we have is 100 million people around the world, especially in poor countries, thrown into poverty. 80 million of families thrown into dire food insecurity. Hundreds of thousands of children dead from starvation because of the economic damage caused by these lockdowns. In the United States, people skipping cancer treatments and screening. Women showing up with late-stage breast cancer that should have been picked up last year. Absolutely catastrophic harm to our children in terms of the educational loss that will reverberate through their entire lives. They will lead poor, less healthy lives as a consequence of this learning loss. That's something that we should have been thinking about all along.
Well, and in response, as Amy was mentioning, in terms of like, let's, you know, go full pandemonium in response right away, which happened over the weekend. You had the governor of New York put a halt to elective surgeries.
I mean, the irony of this is that she put in vaccine mandates that led tens of thousands of nurses to quit. It's she herself caused this shortage of capacity, and now to stop elective surgeries on this speculative idea that there might be a new variant is absolute. It's just irresponsible in a way that I can't even begin to express.
It's
it will cause people to die.
Yep.
Holman Jenkins in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend opining about a sort of normal COVID winter and talking about the conversation that's long overdue in many quarters about living with COVID. He estimated maybe there's 25 million people that have escaped infection and are unvaccinated at this point. You know, unvaccinated or have natural immunity through infection. The basic supposition is like at some point, everybody's going to get it. And all of these policies, particularly when you compare the experience in some Western European countries, particularly Nordic countries, all of this is just chasing a ghost that is being attempted by the Tony Faucis of the world.
That's been true for 2 years. So I did a study in April of 2020 where we looked in L.A. County and at Santa Clara County.
Right.
We found that roughly 4% of the population had been infected. That was already too late to stop the disease from spreading everywhere. At this point, it is very abundantly clear that everyone will face COVID at some point in their life, probably multiple times. It shouldn't be scary because we have better treatments. We have vaccines that are available, especially if you're vulnerable, they're a good idea. And the second, third time you get it, it's going to be milder, much milder than the first time. Rather than panicking the population, we should be giving them tools to cope with the fact that this disease is here to stay.
He is Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, professor of medicine at Stanford. He's a research associate at the National Bureau of Economics Research, senior fellow at the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research, and at the Stanford Freeman Spogli Institute as well. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.